WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but
we have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to another Monday Night Talk. I hope you enjoyed today's rather interesting events. Did you all have a chance to see the eclipse? I think there were more people who were more interested in that than probably most other things that were going on in the world. I didn't have the glasses, so I really couldn't partake, but it was fun to kind of see what was going on social media, and half the people who were enjoying it or talking about it. I might even kind of tie it into the program tonight when we have our various guests be a part of the program and kind of ask them if they had a chance to see the eclipse. They had the special glasses. We have a great program lined up for you where we start things off after traffic with Jackie Murphy, with Kristen Hasiotis. She is the ambassador of the Hope Music Festival that is going to be down at the Cape Cod Melody Tent this Wednesday at 7 p.m. We're going to talk about this event as the proceeds will go to a special cause. We'll talk about that. As we like to do on a regular basis here on Monday Night Talk, we like to plug into a local elected official, whether it's somebody up at the State House, somebody representing in the district, state rep, state senator, maybe a selectman, maybe a city councilor. We have Joan Moschino, who'll be joining us at 6:30. We'll check in with her, see what's going on with her. And at 6:40, yes, you know this gentleman. If you're a Marshfield resident, you know this gentleman, whether he's on TV, Talk of the Town, or if he's one of the folks who stands up during town meeting, or you hear him in the morning when he's filling in for Edward, the good, the bad, and the really, really stupid, Bob Parkus. Will be joining us. We'll chat with Bob about an interesting topic. I actually caught one of his TV shows talking about the investment in the senior center, $4 million senior center, the thought to invest further in the senior center. Also talk a little bit about the sales tax. Whatever happened to the sales tax holiday that we've become accustomed to, but we haven't seen over the past couple of years. We'll talk with Bob about that. They got a special guest. We got Jason Wolf. Jason is a writer for DirtyWaterMedia.com. And he used to be a guy who was in the trenches in the radio world between being a producer for WEEI to becoming a program director, an award-winning program director, somebody who was also nominated for 6 Marconi Awards. And talk with him about the big merger, the possible merger between Entercom and CBS Radio. As you folks may or may not know, Entercom, a parent company for a number of Boston area radio stations, one of them being sports giant WEEI. And if this acquisition goes through, they will have ownership of, other than WATD, the other big news organization, on the AM side, 10:30 AM, and also the Sports Hub. Very interesting article that Jason wrote. When I saw the article, I read the article, that I'd reach out and say, Jason, come on. I want to talk with you about it, because he makes some interesting points in regards to that possible merger. So we'll talk with him about that. And as we've been trying to do here on a somewhat regular basis, as many folks who are astute and listen to the station, we no longer just say 95.9 FM WATD in Marshfield. There's also 1460 AM WATD AM in Brockton. Well, past couple of weeks, we've tried to feature some of the candidates that are going to be on the ballot. Not necessarily candidates that are going to be on the September preliminary ballot, but folks who are just going to be on the city ballot. As you know, the city elections are every 2 years. So we will look forward to speaking with a couple of individuals. Tony Branch, Bishop Tony Branch, running for city council, as well as Angel Cosme and Jean Derenoncourt. I think I'm saying that right. I'll check with Gene when he comes in. But we're going to talk with them about why they are seeking office, just coming up in a few moments.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. Message me directly on Brennan Smoke Shop's Facebook page.
This guy drives me nuts. He's so annoying. I'm going to message him on Facebook right now.
Hey, it's Jeff from Facebook.
Oh.
Adam, were you just going to message me on Facebook for no good reason? Huh?
How are you doing this?
Adam, everyone knows I'm everywhere all at once. I'm in your car. I'm on your phone. I'm on your computer. With the power of radio broadcasting, I'm everywhere. You can't hide from me. I'm Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop.
Get out of my radio. Stop it, Jeffrey. Get out of my phone. Help.
Adam, wake up.
I won't message anymore.
Wake up.
Please, stop. Just go away.
Wake up.
Oh, I was having a nightmare.
It was only a dream. Everything's going to be fine.
No, it's not. It's Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop.
Oh! It's a nightmare.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop. Message me directly on Brennan's Smoke Shop's Facebook page.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Thank you very much, Joe. Joe is correct. You can download the latest Monday Night Talk podcast. They are up and available. Just a quick note, Jeffrey Yelenesian, we will have him on here. He actually kind of apprised me to a video that is on Netflix called What the Health. And Jeffrey is somebody who pays attention to what's going on in regards to eating habits and asked me if he could actually do a segment in regards to it. So pay attention, look forward to that in the next couple of weeks as we have Jeffrey on. But right now we turn our focus to a South Shore resident who is part of the family that actually owns Cumberland Farms. We have Kristen Hasiotis. Kristen is the ambassador for the Hope Music Festival that is going to be taking place this Wednesday, August 23rd, at the Cape Cod Melody Tent. Kristen, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you. It's Kristen Williams Hasiotis, and I actually grew up in Norwell. So, Tom Williams is a cousin of mine. I think he has a program, and John Duane does as well. So thank you so much.
Yeah, see, when we were given the information, they left off the Williams, so I totally apologize.
Yes.
And I'm a good friend of Tom's. Tom does sound advice law here on Saturdays.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite people of all time, so I'm thrilled to be on the same radio program or the same radio station.
Well, from what I understand, you are quite the philanthropist, and you are here to kind of give folks a little bit of an appetizer to get on down and be a part of this event down to the Cape Cod Melody Tent. Tell us a little bit about this show that has one heck of a lineup, and the money is going to a good cause.
It is. Several months ago, I was asked if I wanted to get involved in the 2017 Hope Music Festival at the Cape Cod Melody Tent this Wednesday. And the cause was opioid addiction on Cape Cod. The goal is to raise $250,000 for Cape Cod Hospital, who are the first responders for the opioid crisis on Cape Cod. And after I learned that Cape Cod has four times the overdose statistics of Massachusetts, as well as I think many of us know that nationwide it's an epidemic, and it's a national emergency, 124 people are dying a day of opioid overdose. And I felt like it was really time that I step in and do something. So I really shared my story of going through treatment when I was young, at 19, and felt as though my life started after I got clean. And although my story is not anything like what's happening today, I feel as though it's time the stigma goes away and we just start talking about the fact that we have to do something.
Now, do you feel that the state and federal government, they're doing enough to fund not only folks who need assistance when it comes to abuse issues, but also educating folks so they won't get hooked on drugs?
You know, that's a great question. I think people are trying to do what they can. It's such a complicated issue. I think we're still at the place where we think it's choice that addicts get hooked. I mean, the statistics are that 85% of overdose victims start their use of opioids through a prescription, through their own or somebody else's, whether they're in pain physically or emotionally. So addiction is, you know, they say it's not your fault, but it's something that we all have to learn a little more about. And in that way, I think it just takes more education for the general public, to be honest with you.
And again, just if folks are just tuning in, we have Kristen Williams-Hasiotis, and we're talking a little bit about the 2017 upcoming show, the Hope Music Festival. And this is one heck of a lineup. Do you have the lineup in front of you?
I do. And my friend and favorite music man, James Montgomery, has put together the lineup. We have Mark Farner from Grand Funk Railroad, Rick Derringer, Grammy Award-winning artist and guitarist, Barry Goudreau, formerly of the band, Grace Kelly. She's an amazing saxophone player. Uptown Horns, Elliot Easton, formerly of the Cars, Charlie Farron of the Joe Perry Project.
Nice.
The list goes on and on and on. It will be truly a great event, filled with great musicians. I think it'll be quite a show.
And again, just so folks know, this is going to be at the Melody Tent, 7 p.m., 21 West Main Street in Hyannis. There's general admission tickets. There's VIP tickets, all available on www.hopecapecod.com. Anything you want to say in closing?
No, I really want people to get to know the cause and the project. The community has really rallied together, and I'm so proud of Cape Cod and the musicians and the community to say we really want to do something about it. And I'm thrilled that you took the time to learn more about it. Thank you.
Well, now the hope is that this is going to be an aspiring annual event. So that probably means that you're going to have to come back on with me again next year.
Oh, thank you. I'd be honored to. I really appreciate it. I think, you know, the following has been great, and it's a wonderful cause. And again, I haven't done all the work, but I certainly thought that stepping up and saying that, you know, we're all in this together is an important message to share. So thank you.
Amen. And thank you so much for joining us. And we'll look forward to talking with you again in regards to the next show.
Thank you.
You got it.
Thanks so much.
Kristen Williams.
Bye-bye.
Hasiotis joining us. Who knew that she's related to Tom Williams, who does a show here. Also does a show on Quincy Cable Access as well. And talking a little bit about this great lineup, you know, the James Montgomery Blues Band, Gary Hoey, you've got Mark Farner from the Grand Funk Railroad, Rick Derringer, Grace Kelly, just to name a few. Ayla Brown is on this list as well for this great upcoming event at the Cape Cod Melody Tent, 7 p.m., and if you want to get tickets, it's www.hopecapecod.com. And the proceeds going to help with treatment when it comes to the opioid addiction and also education. We turn our focus to our next guest. They're coming fast and furious up next as part of our State House report, and also to give us a little bit of a report as to what she saw up in the skies. We have none other than State Representative Joan Moschino. Representative, how are you?
I'm great, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me on tonight.
So did you have your special glasses today?
No, I did it safely. I cut the hole in the little piece of paper. It really worked. I could see it. But then I was actually got a chance to run down to the Scituate Public Library this afternoon, and they had a whole program with the safe glasses, and then some of their local astronomers had all of these really fantastic telescopes, and it was amazing to be able to observe the sun through that. It was stunning, actually. It was fun.
Well, now, I have to ask you this, and that is here we are about to close out, maybe your seventh month in office. What has it been like?
Yes. Oh, my gosh, I've been having a great time. Events like that, like the one that Scituate Public Library hosted, are really just fun. All of these great things are going on in our communities. That happened to be the one today. Yesterday, I was down at DCR at Nantasket Beach. Save the Harbor, Save the Bay invited an artist down, and, it was, they got all these adults down on the beach with rakes, drawing flowers in the sand. But it was really, the community engagement piece has been a lot of fun. And but we've been settled into 5 office hours every month because I have 4 towns and Lyndon Pond. So I'm every week, at least once, if not twice, I'm meeting with constituents. And, I'm a lawyer. I've always enjoyed representing people. I've always enjoyed solving problems and helping people. So it's been going really well. August has been quiet. As you know, the House is only meeting an informal session right now. So it's been really nice to be in the district during this part of the year in particular.
Now, you're finally out of the bullpen. Do you have your own office?
Oh, thank God. I was the last one. I'm not sure what that means. But yes, the day we started budget negotiation sessions at the House was the first day I got into my office. But I actually have a window, so someone was looking down on me, I guess. It's been good. It's been nice to settle in. And for those of you who are listening and you haven't had a chance to call the office, please do and introduce yourself to me, to my aide, Ryan. He's terrific. We're here to help, and we really like to hear from people, we really do.
What seems to be the thing that the folks or the things that people are reaching out to you about since you've been sworn into office?
It's really kind of all over the board. A lot of seniors reaching out, needing help connecting with services, with housing. A lot of the townspeople and the elected officials need help engaging state agencies and filing grant applications. Tomorrow we happen to be meeting with Commissioner Roy in Nantasket, to talk about a whole host of different projects or opportunities that are happening throughout the district. Also some policy. Last week I happened to have office hours in Cohasset, and I met with some of the students at Coastal Student Research Center. I might have got that wrong. But it was their marine debris team talking to me about the research they're doing and some of the opportunities that we might have for policy initiatives and legislative initiatives. So it's really run the gamut, all interesting stuff. And, it's nice to young and old to be able to help people and move their projects along and try to help solve their problems as well. It's been good. It's been really good.
Again, we're speaking with the State Representative Joan Moschino. She is our guest for this, we're just checking in to see how she's doing. And again, she's talking about she finally got in office. I would say they always save the best for last. So you're saying you got a window, so that must have meant something.
I was just grateful. Natural light, I can actually open it, a little fresh air. You're up at the State House, lots of hot air up there, so a little fresh air was good. And it's been going really well. And we're looking forward to, it's been nice to have a quiet period to sort of regroup and really think about, the ebb and the flow of it, how things are doing, and sort of tightening up how we're dealing, just with our response to things and getting back on track with our goals. And I'm, looking forward to having just a little downtime the last week of August and then coming back after Labor Day, to get right back at it. I'm on some pretty interesting committees, and you know, they'll have a lot of hearings in the fall, and I'm sure the House will be taking up some interesting issues, so we'll go from there.
Remind folks who don't remember our previous conversations, of course, you can go onto the podcast site and check out the last time we had the representative on, the last couple of times we had the representative on, but what are those committees, and what do you expect the conversations to be?
So I'm on some very substantive committees, community development and small business, so obviously very important for the small business component, very important for our district, transportation and telecom, utility and energy. And I know that, you know, transportation, there were over 300 bills. So I've just been sort of working through them. And it's funny, some of those you would be surprised, like, double telephone poles, like, you know, sometimes it's kind of odd stuff. But I think with the energy conversation around some of the green energy and the renewables, I think there'll be some really interesting conversations to be had around that. So I'm pretty excited about it. I think it'll be good.
Anything in regards to flood insurance? We've had Joe Rossi, who chairs the Marshall Citizens Coastal Coalition, and he's kind of the guy who specializes in what's going on. And the last couple of times we've had him on over the past couple of weeks, he has kind of said that we're all kind of anticipating what's going to happen with Congress in regards to renewal for flood insurance on the federal level. Any conversations? Have you heard from any constituents in that regard?
So nobody has reached out to me, but being aware of that might happen. That's a very real concern for our district. Obviously, I've been in touch with our own representative, Jim Cantwell, who's been such a leader in this regard. And we've told him whatever he needs from me. But we're watching to see what happens, because that's a very real important issue for us, making sure that continues to be a sustainable program.
Do you find it? Who do you feel are the colleagues here in the South Shore that you're gravitating towards when you're looking for answers, you're trying to get something done for a constituent or trying to continue a conversation? Who do you gravitate towards these days?
You know, I really stick with the South Shore delegation. They're pretty seasoned, they're pretty experienced, and they're just great guys. So often I'm in touch with Representative Murphy from Weymouth, mm-hmm. Definitely from Representative Cantwell, as well as Representative Cutler and Representative Coulter. And
yeah,
those have been my sort of go-to guys for just for everything across the board, who to talk to in the building, who's working on, you know, a particular issue, just advice on how to approach something or where to find answers. You know, it's a lot to figure out up in the Hill, but it's fascinating to be in the building. A lot of really smart people working on some good stuff, some really important issues. And, you know, our South Shore delegation has just a great amount of, they've just been in the building a long time. They just have so much experience, and they know right who to guide you to. So it's been good. It's been really good working with them.
And just to remind folks, if anybody in your district is looking to have a conversation with you, of course, the best way is to contact Ryan, your aide, right?
Yes, he's in charge of me in scheduling. And the number at the State House is 617-722-2320. And if you forget, don't write it down. Just go online to MA Legislature. And you can look up, anybody can look up their representative. You just put your address in and it takes you right to your person, or you can just search by my name. So you'll always be able to have the most available contact information. And then the email is just my name, joan.moschino@mahouse.gov. So please, if there's anything, or you just want to stop by and say hello, you want to find out where the office hours are, or if we can help with anything, and don't hesitate to call and say "atta girl" too. If I actually have done something well, that's always nice to hear too. So we really love to hear from you.
And she's actually right, because I usually work the chain of command. I reached out looking for Ryan. I looked online, reached out for Ryan, and worked from there. And even emailed the representative herself. Got right back to me probably within about an hour or two of sending the email, which is commendable. And you have that with a lot of the South Shore representatives. Doesn't matter if there's a D or an R or an I, they all want to assist you and help you find a way to get answers to your questions. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to solve whatever issue it is, but they can at least help you find some answers that might be, you know, instead of being stuck somewhere in a quagmire or purgatory, you get some justification, so to speak.
Yeah, especially when you're wrangling with state agencies.
Yeah.
You know, we have contacts with each of the state agencies that they've set up specifically for the legislators, so we can find out where something's in process. You know, I'm just thinking applying for a handicap placard with the RMV. We can find out where it is in process, or unemployment benefits. Just call and make sure it didn't fall off, you know, off the radar screen. And so sometimes just a call to know that it's, you know, it's moving forward. And I promise you, you know, anybody's going to call with a problem, you're not the first person to have that challenge. So definitely don't be shy about reaching out, and we're happy to help. And we do prioritize constituent services first. So I hear from literally thousands of people on policy issues, you know, input on bills and different initiatives and things that are going on. Those we can't always reply to right away. But I read everything myself, and we always prioritize constituent services. So if you need help with something, we're going to get right back to you.
There she is, the state representative, Joan Moschino. Representative, thank you, and we hope you have a good Labor Day weekend, and we'll talk to you probably sometime after that.
Oh, you too, and I'm sure we will. Thanks so much, Kevin. Good night, everyone.
You got this. She is Representative Joan Moschino joining us. We're going to step aside just for a couple of moments, but when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome opening day, Pembroke Titans softball. Okay, Addie, you got this. Just relax.
I know, Dad.
First batter coming to the plate. I know, Hattie, but just keep your eye on the ball. Just keep your eye on the ball.
Dad, relax. I do got this.
I know, Hattie. Remember, don't swing at the first pitch.
Daddy!
And here's the pitch. That is a fair... In fact, that's a home run!
Sorry about your windshield, Dad.
Are you kidding me? That was awesome. I'm keeping the inspection sticker for a souvenir.
Windshield broken by a home run? Call Tiny first. 1-888-64-TINYS.
That's my Hattie.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Thank you for staying with us here on Monday Night Talk. And as you've come to know from this particular program, we like to inform, enlighten the folks of the South Shore. Again, this is we try to get a message out, whether it's with local officials, whether it's individuals who are working on events, or folks who like to, you know what, who want to kind of give insight on certain things. I will tell you, over the years, I have become a big fan of an individual who's here in Marshfield.
Where?
I know, right, where? He is somebody that you hear in this radio program from time to time between 7:30 and 8 a.m. during the good, the bad, the really, really stupid. And he has his own television show. And
how did I ever accomplish that?
You
sit there and your face goes all over the place. You can't stop.
You can't stop. And it so happened that the other day, myself doing work in another media field, was looking around. We like to add programming from other communities. And I happened upon our next guest, Bob Parkus, who is a gentleman who, you know, when there's issues, he's not shy. He's not bashful. But he's somebody who makes sure he does his homework. As when you watch him, not only with Taxzilla, who is his friendly pet on set of his TV show, but he usually has all his information right there with him to pull from. And the most recent thing that interested me, Mr. Parkus, was your take on what's going on about the Marshfield Senior Center.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, being a senior myself and having not yet been drummed out of the organization, you know, I figure I have earned the right to speak.
Sure.
And some years ago, they decided to spend $4 million on a senior center. Okay. And they had an unfinished upstairs. Okay. That seems frugal. So now it's some years later, and they say, oh, my gosh, we're burgeoning, we're exploding, people are getting older, we can't stop it. So we would like to refurbish the upstairs. Well, how much is that going to cost? Well, they didn't know. Now we've had a study. What you do is you pay people, and they study it. And here's what they decided.
A feasibility study.
You bet. And they decided to spend way more money. The upstairs is too tiny. They're going to expand this thing. The current figure is $6 million, additional $6 bucks. Are you kidding me? And get this. They want to expand it because the burgeoning population of we senior citizens have a crying need to get together and do whatever they do at the senior center. I don't know what that is. I was there a couple of times to shoot pool, made some fast bucks, and then I had to hightail it out of there. But here's the thing. $6 bucks, they got plenty of dough to do that. It's only open 5 days a week. Saturday and Sunday, it is closed. Where is the clamorous outcry to keep the place open on the weekends? Save $6 bucks. They say they can't keep it open on the weekends because they don't have the money. Are you kidding?
So are you saying that if they were open an additional 104 days, that's according to my dirty math.
I know. I checked the math on that.
Okay. That maybe there would not be such a need to expand.
I say that.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Well, but you would have to, you would still have to probably financially.
$100,000, let's say. Let's be generous. Okay. Wow. Let's be generous. Wow. Hire a slew of people for $100,000. Look, here's what I love about Marshfield. We are for the people. We are for the people. For instance, the food pantry. $2.5 million to refurbish the food pantry and a couple of other offices. So the folks in need who have to drive to the food pantry to get food, their property taxes had to go up to provide for the amenities of our brand spanking new food pantry. Hard-pressed seniors, fixed income, trying to make a living. Their property taxes also, which direction do you suppose?
Up.
That would be up yeah. and away, yeah. okay, for an unneeded facility. Taxing the poor to benefit the contractors. That's what it is. So this whole thing is because some contractor sees that he can get away with it. So more power to him because people do not pay attention.
And it's interesting that you say that is because, and I'm not putting this, I'm not, this isn't a blanket statement for contractors. There are good contractors out there. There are reasonable contractors out there. But there are also, there's too many times being a reporter where a community has embarked on bringing in a general contractor to build a school, per se. And it's, you know, that the, you know, you have the dogfight over, should we spend this kind of money to build this brand new school as opposed to refurbishing the old school? And, you know, the town, okay, we're going to do a debt exclusion over 10 years to be able to build this school. And then the school is built, and then 10 years down the road, you find out that there's all kinds of problems with the school that, you know what, maybe there's a little bit of shoddy work by that said contractor. But a lot of times, and this is, again, this is through stories that I have done, sometimes those contractors are no longer in business. So you can't chase them down to be able to have them remediate the situation.
Marshfield belongs in a special category. Now, folks out there who don't know about Marshfield are going to think that I am fibbing, that I am making up this story. I am not. Marshfield has a new high school, $103 million, totally unnecessary. So how do you go about building a brand new, totally unnecessary high school to benefit the contractors who are going to make profits building it? How do you do that? Here's what you do. You have a leaking roof in the gymnasium, and you don't fix it. Even though kids are in danger of slipping and sliding and falling, even though other teams who normally would come in to play basketball against the Marshfield Rams will not come to the gymnasium because it is unsafe if it has been raining. The floorboards are buckling. Town meeting is held in the gymnasium at the old Marshfield High School with gigantic drapes up in the ceiling, hung from the girders to collect the water that is dripping down through the ceiling, and then pipes go outside to drop the water outside, okay? By the way, the drapes used to collect the water leaked, naturally. What's that on my head on the floor of town meeting? I'm not kidding about this. So why did, and they did that for 3 or 4 years. I'm not kidding. They would not fix the roof. They refused. Mm. Oh, look what we need. Oh, my gosh. It's for the children of Marshfield. They're in danger. This is atrocious. This is unsustainable. They could have fixed the roof. Didn't want to. Mm. So there it is. Is that why I'm here?
No, but again, I've always enjoyed a lot of your insights to certain things. It just happened, it so happened that the most recent one that you did, I don't think you've yet to do anything on this during the morning segments, but I happened to catch it on TV, and I thought you did a great job in kind of spelling it out.
Well, you're talking about the senior center?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, that's not why I'm here. That's not why I'm here.
No, but I have you here because I enjoy your insight. You're not the typical lockstep rubber stamper that some folks tend to be.
I'm hoping that people will become in lockstep with me.
Yeah.
The more the merrier. We'll march on Washington together.
And you find flaw. You know how to find flaws in things, even especially about the upcoming or possible tax holiday.
Oh my gosh, you got around to it. Look at that. Thank you very much.
It
took a long time. It took about 10 minutes.
Bob, that was a gradual buildup. There was a genius in it.
All right, well, look, I've got a platitude here.
Okay? Oh boy.
I was going to call it a bromide, but bromide sounds a little bit like Alka-Seltzer. So it's a platitude. This is the stuff that you learn in school, okay?
Yes.
You've
yes.
heard this, believe
yes.
me. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal. I am equal to Tom Brady, and Tom Brady is equal to you. Now, that's a fact. You should be looking at me with some skepticism at this moment. This is radio. People can't tell,
they
but
can't.
Really, no.
No,
you know?
No. But I know that I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Well, here it comes, okay? The other one. This is the first presidential tweak that I can remember. This was tweaked by Abraham Lincoln. We have government of the people, by the people, and for the people. He said that.
Mm-hmm.
You got that one?
I got that.
Okay. Now, government of, by, and for the people. Have we ever had that?
I don't know.
Which leads me to the father of our country, George Washington. His first military act as president was to sic the federal troops on the Pennsylvania farmers who were not paying a whiskey tax. This is what rose our first president to action, military action. The farmers were not paying the tax on the whiskey. Now, what they were doing is they were turning grain into whiskey because it was easier to ship whiskey than it was to ship grain, right?
Mm.
And, of course, there's an eager demand for whiskey, so they seized the day, the opportunity. They took it. We're making money hand over fist. Why, oh, why should they give any of it away? Because if you don't, we'll kill you. Is that government of the people, by the people, for the people?
No. No, but it's funny that you say that, and maybe this could be something that we have a future discussion on in regards to our, you know, trying to break away from Britain. You know, and you know, the king and the king's taxes.
I want to break away from North Korea. Oh, by the way, do you think
that all depends on Guam.
Why did I bring up taxes, do you think?
Well, you brought up taxes because, well, we're talking about a tax-free holiday this
week. We are. That is correct.
Yes,
and here's what I've got here. I got this headline. This is a radio headline. The sales tax holiday is DOA. Yep. Governor Baker filed a bill that would allow consumers to buy most products that cost under $2,500 on Saturday, August 19, and Sunday. You can shop on Sunday now.
Oh, boy.
Without paying the state's 6.25% sales tax. Howsomever, the bill is not supported by House Speaker Robert DeLeo.
Gasp.
Which makes it dead on arrival. Now, DeLeo says no can do because the state is experiencing unprecedented revenue shortfalls. Couple comments I'd like to make. Number one, revenue shortfall is propaganda for overspending. That's one. Mm. Number two, government of the people, by the people, for the people. We elect representatives. They're supposed to deliberate on things like this, but it's dead on arrival. Why? Because what the Speaker of the House says is it. That's it. And our representatives down here locally, Josh Cutler, Jim Cantwell, and Tom Calter, they do, as told at the State House, 94% of the time. Except that's not quite true. Because Jim Cantwell, the birthday boy, he does as he's told 99.4% of the time. He is 99.44% pure. Hey, nobody's perfect.
Wait, isn't that Ivory Soap?
Ah, he's a clean. He's clean. As they say, he's clean. Now look, it's ridiculous because there's no debate going on. Mm-hmm. No one's. Why are we electing people if they just go down there and do as they're told?
Well, if I can throw, if I can, you know, you should never answer a question with a question, but it's interesting where you talked about the speaker saying that there's a shortfall, but these, when we talk about the revenue and when the, you know, the revenue projections compared to what actually comes in for revenue, you know just as well as anybody what happens when we see a little bit more revenue than we should during the month. What happens?
Spend.
Right. And that's called, what do they do? They put together a supplemental budget and they...
Well, they can always borrow money when they have to, you know.
No, but what I'm saying, though, is it's interesting.
It's, the problem isn't the taxes. The problem is the spending.
Right.
And so we elect people to go down there, and they all say that they're going to stop the wasteful spending. They all say that. And it's all a tremendous, can I use the three-letter word?
If you must.
Lie.
Okay.
Because what they won't, what Cutler will not tell you, what Cantwell will not tell you, and what Calter will not tell you, is that they do what they're told all the time. So why are we giving them money? I mentioned that Jim Cantwell is the birthday boy because he sent me an appeal on his 50th birthday. He invited me to his birthday party and he asked me to give him $50. It was his 50th birthday party. Now he's having another birthday party 2 years later. I wonder what I should bring as a present. Why would I give these guys any money? They just do as told.
It is interesting. Well, here's the thing, though, is it's interesting you say that because there is no middle ground because I know other individual state reps or state senators who have gone against the grain and have been...
What are they doing for work these days?
Well, I know one of them is actually running for another office, and another one is actually holding another office.
Were these Republicans, by the way?
They were, yes.
Yes, they were. So they have nothing
also,
to lose.
But they're also the minority party at this particular...
That's what I mean. There was only four of them in the state Senate.
In this state. But it's like a damned if you do, damned if you don't type of a scenario. But going back to this tax-free weekend, give me your thoughts on, if you will, your thoughts on having this annual occurrence, and is this something that should expand beyond just the big box stores who are allowed to do this?
Well, I can tell you this is not anecdotal experience. This is statistically accurate. Retailers love it. Mm. Retailers love it. It's sure. Just a fact. You can't have it, though, because the state would lose $30 million. Who should have that $30 million? The state, who spends it wisely on your behalf, or you? Mm. I want the dough. I know how to spend it. Sure. Jim Cantwell doesn't know how to spend my money.
Well, because I was going to expand upon that thought, and we just got a couple of moments here. Again, we're speaking with Bob Parkus, WATD's own Bob Parkus, also TV star.
You
are a star.
A star.
But how do you feel, and I've advocated for this in the past, while it's good for the box stores, why not? What about the smaller business? What about the mom-and-pop outfits like the restaurants?
Well, I was talking to a guy from... I will say, Martha's Cycle down there in North Plymouth. Mm. And, how are things going, Ed? And he says, oh, things are going good except for the tax-free holiday. He said, I lost a lot of money. Mm. And so you're asking me, how do people feel about it? He was angry. Mm. He really was. he's spitting bullets.
How about as far as like restaurants, though? What if we did something for the restaurants?
I think
it's on a smaller degree, but that they're not. I don't think they're included in this.
Well, I worked in restaurants for 10 years when I was in school, and there was that restaurant tax. It used to be called the Massachusetts Old Age Tax, you know. And then they changed. That was politically incorrect, so they changed it to the Old Boy Tax. We love getting this extra dough. And there are taxes on taxes, by the way. What should we do? Are there too many taxes? Yeah, there are too many taxes. Can we do without all the wonderful services that we enjoy? Mm. Yeah, you bet. Do I need a senior center expansion? $6 million? No.
No, you just want more staff on the weekends.
That's all I want, 100 grand instead of $6 million, you know?
Where do things stand as far as that goes? Is that something that's going to be coming on?
Oh, you can't lose. You want to get into Marshfield politics? The guys have drilled holes in the roof?
I left my hip at Waiters at home. So
oh, my God.
No, but I again,
That's a whole other show, how they hand that one up.
I live vicariously.
They hand that one off quite easily.
I live vicariously through your words. That's what I do. But I thank you very much for taking time this evening to be on the program. And if folks want to watch you on TV, how can they do that?
They can't, because I won't be on. Here's the other thing. I've had it. I'm done.
I'm done.
And by the way, I'm going to save people a lot of money. You don't have to go to South Carolina to view the solar eclipse.
And I don't have to. You mean I don't have to get a special app on my phone or anything, or get those glasses?
You don't need the glasses. All you got to do is walk outside later tonight and look around.
There he is. Wise words from Mr. Bob Parker. Thank you so much, sir, for joining us. I'm sure we'll have to have you back in once again.
No, it's too late. What time is it? I'm sleepy. I'm going home.
We're going to step aside, and when we come back, I promise, more Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, welcome back to the second hour of Monday Night Talk. Heard here on 959WATD. In Marshfield and 1460 AM in Brockton. And our next guest, gentleman who knows all about the media world, a radio guy, anybody who's paid attention on EEI, the sports giant. He has worked anywhere from being a program director to being somebody who was the VP of Programming and Operations, nominated for six Marconis, winning four. And so also somebody who now writes for Dirty Water Media and is somebody who does stuff on the financial side. We have Mr. Jason Wolf, who's joining us. And I have Jason joining me because he wrote one heck of an article in regards to a couple of big giants in the radio world, in the media world. Entercom and CBS folks know that CBS has put up a bunch of their stations on the block, and there's been word that Entercom, who is the parent to WEEI, RKO, a couple of other stations on the dial, AM and FM, there's word that there's a little bit of a word in place in regards to a purchase, a letter of intent. Jason, welcome to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm glad to have you on the program. A sports radio connoisseur myself, this caught my eye, also knowing that you were the gentleman behind the scenes for many years, nearly 15 years at EEI. Give me your thoughts in regards to what's happening with Boston Radio.
Well, it's going to change quite dramatically once this deal goes down. And it's a done deal, at least in terms of the fact that Entercom and CBS are going to become one company at some point in the future. Many people are saying it's going to happen sometime in the fourth quarter. Personally, I think the earliest it could happen is the end of the year, maybe sometime in December. There's just a lot of red tape that's going on right now between the DOJ looking into the deal, making sure that there are situations in the various markets where Entercom has to divest stations that is going to pass the smell test, if you will, and not create an unfair advantage from an advertising perspective. Mm. But it's definitely going to happen. It's going to position Entercom as arguably the most successful company from a balance sheet standpoint in radio. They're going to have a tremendous opportunity to do a great deal of business, particularly on the sports side, because they're going to have the rights. They're going to own the broadcast rights to over 40 professional and college sports teams. So they've got a tremendous deal on paper sitting in front of them. It's just a question, really, of when it comes down and how it's going to affect what goes on here in Boston. And based on the information that I have over the last couple of weeks, talking to a lot of people and investigating a little bit on my own, I do believe it's going to change the landscape quite dramatically. What form that takes, I still think is left to be seen. We know that by FCC regulations, Entercom only has to divest of two stations in Boston to meet the FCC's limit for local ownership. But they might wind up having to give up more. It really depends on who the swapping partners are or what stations they choose to sell outright. We're just going to have to see how it plays out.
And it's interesting that you say that, because one of the entities that's involved is the big news station in town, 10:30 a.m. And that's a legendary station. And in your article, right, you kind of say that this might be something that if they have to divest themselves of two stations, that 10:30 a.m. could be one of them.
Right. Well, I worked for Entercom for 15 years, as you said. I've worked mm-hmm. for WEEI since it became an all-sports station in 1991.
Yep.
And I can tell you that David Field, as an owner, is as supportive and as passionate about sports and sports radio as any of the group owners that own any of the broadcast groups. So he really wants to keep the sports play intact. And if all things go his way, he would keep both WEEI and WBZ-FM, because it would create an unbelievable situation for him, both on paper and on the air. And I just don't know if that's going to be the case. So in order to make it all work, the one of the likely scenarios, or one of these scenarios, I shouldn't say likely, but it's possible, is that he would give up on WBZ-AM, in part because it generates so much revenue that it would shift the balance sheet of the new cluster to be more favorable from an advertising perspective to everybody. But I don't think he wants to do that. I think he wants to keep as much as he possibly can. And again, we're just going to have to see how it plays out.
Myself, I'm somebody who follows wrestling or sports entertainment. I remember back in 2000 when the WWE purchased the World Championship Wrestling, WCW, buying its competition, and then later kind of putting it on the shelf. How will Entercom be able to keep both of these sports giants and at least be able to keep the talent? I mean, they got A-list talent on both. How will they be able to keep both sides happy, both stations happy?
Well, I think if they do keep them, they'll probably run them independently as they're being run right now.
Okay.
I don't suspect there'll be a whole lot of changes on the talent side. There certainly is not going to be a emerging, if you will, and try to create one superstation with the best talent from both sides. I mean, both stations are incredibly successful right now. They're making a lot of money. They've got great ratings. There's no reason to operate them any differently. I think what potentially puts it over the top for the DOJ is that with both stations comes the rights to all four professional teams. So when you add all that together and put it on a piece of paper, it looks extremely favorable for one side, and it could be perceived as disadvantageous to everybody else in town. Now, the one argument that may work in their favor is that the sports dollars for broadcast rights those dollars are pretty much assigned. In other words, if you own the rights to the Red Sox and there are advertisers that want to be associated with the Red Sox, whichever station has the rights is going to get that money. So they might be able to make that case with regard to all four of those professional teams, and in that regard, it might bolster their argument. But I certainly don't expect to see talent switching from one side to another, or worse yet, a merging of the two stations to try to make one. I don't think that will happen by any stretch.
Well, the thing that I find funny is since word of this broke, you hear, usually it's kind of a faux pas that you hear talent, you know, from one station talking about talent at the other station, unless they're talking about things that are going on the TV level.
Right.
And so my question, knowing that you kind of get an inside track on this, would we see somebody from one particular, show visit the other station? You're kind of saying that won't happen. You're nixing that.
No, I think if you have one person coming on as a guest or to provide another point of view, I could certainly see that happening. I mean, that all that does is cross-promote both brands. I'm saying if you're going to take one guy from, say, the EEI morning show and all of a sudden decide you want to put him on the 98.5 morning show full-time, that's not going to happen.
No.
But I certainly think you could see certain people from different shows showing up on other shows, if for no other reason than just to create more dialogue, to push the passion button and see what kind of radio can be created.
I have to say, I loved how you broke down if Entercom has to make a choice. Do we keep our own station, or do we go with the newer station that's doing well in the demographics, with the younger demographics? And you kind of give it a wash between 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. But if I had to put a gun to your head, what's your gut say to you that they would have to do if they have to pick one?
Well, I'll answer it in two ways. Okay. First of all, for those of us who are close to the scene, there are going to be fans of both sides. So mm-hmm. There's a certain percentage of people that only listen to EEI and hate 98.5, and there's another percentage of people that love 98.5 and couldn't care less about what goes on at WEEI. I don't think that Entercom is going to look at this as a huge decision to make, because it's part of a much bigger play. Mm. I mean, Boston's one of the most important markets, that goes without saying, and clearly they're going to take everything very seriously, but they're not going to let this one decision potentially derail a billion-dollar deal. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the pieces that I pointed out in the article, that's my opinion on what I believe Entercom is going to have to look at when it comes to having to decide one way or the other. And I just think personally, you have to look at the fact that 98.5 has a younger audience. Those people are going to be in the core demo for a longer period of time, which means they have a better chance of sustaining their ratings. And their signal is significantly better. I mean, it's not even close. And if you drive from, Haverhill, let's say, up on the North Shore, all the way down to close to the Providence line, let's say Attleboro, you're going to get 98.5 all up and down that corridor. And there's going to be pieces where you're not going to get EEI as great. And that's just because the tower for EEI is to the north, and the tower for 98.5 is centrally located, I think, in Needham. So it's just a significantly better signal. It reaches more people. And I think those are two key elements that the company will have to look at if they're forced to make a decision.
Yeah, so basically it's signal strength. The other thing I was going to say, you spell it out as to why they would probably want to go towards the Sports Hub than EEI, but a part of me feels as though they've invested so much over the past couple of years to rebuild their brand. They went from, Dennis and Callahan to bringing in a guy like a Minahan, who, he's kind of an edgy guy, and he's kind of helped them rebound in the ratings. There's a lot of work bringing back a Glenn Ordway, who has kind of helped, them do better with numbers in the midday when they were struggling for so long. A part of me would think that where they've invested that amount of time, that they may not want to give that up. That might be the one sticking point where they've kind of, they made strides.
I mean, again, Kevin, loyalty is is probably going to be the smallest factor. I mean, they just can't afford to make a decision based on that. I mean, the reality is that the lineup that EEI had before all the changes were made had a hell of a lot more life in it than the company gave it credit for at the time they made the changes.
Right.
And obviously things did not go well for them over a period of a couple of years. But now they've brought, as to your point, a number of people back. They've allowed Minahan to be a real player in the morning, and he's created a tremendous following for himself and for the show. And they really set the tone for what goes on from an audience perspective for the rest of the radio station. So I think both stations, when you look at it from a ratings perspective and a revenue perspective, are probably relatively equal. Again, I think it's going to come down to those other factors. And frankly, it'll depend on what else is going on. You know, there are still a whole bunch of other stations that are in play, whether it's AMP or Mix or WRKO. I mean, who knows if there are other companies out there that strategically would want stations like that to be part of a deal that would allow Entercom to keep a certain percentage of the stations in place that they truly want. We just don't know. That part of it still is yet to be determined.
Well, I want to thank you for taking a couple of minutes out of your busy schedule to chat with us about this. Again, I'm somebody who has loved, you know, the sports stations that are not only when it was just the giant EEI, but then with the creation of the Sports Hub. I mean, I like it where it's, you know, it's extra gravy for me, somebody who follows sports. Do you miss it as being a guy who was in the trenches, you know, as a radio executive?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, I think that we had an unbelievable run, and I wish that I had more time to erase some of the mistakes that were made. But, you know, it is what it is, and you move on. You get into other things, and that's what I'm doing. But sure, it was a highly energized, incredibly passionate environment, and I'm glad to see that both stations are doing well. I mean, we always thought that there was room for two, and clearly there is. They're both doing exceptionally well.
Amen. Yeah, we're speaking with Jason Wolf, DirtyWaterMedia.com, also a chief media marketing strategist for Money Matters Radio, and also does a little consulting for the San Diego the Padres, right?
I did a project for them a couple of years ago. They are big supporters of a charity called Pedal the Cause out in San Diego. It's very similar to the Pan Mass Challenge,
right,
in terms of the structure. It's a biking event, but on a much smaller scale. I think they'd love to see it reach the level that the Pan Mass Challenge has reached, but they're in its beginning stages, and they wanted me to produce and direct a broadcast that was similar to what we did with the Jimmy Fund, an EEI on a radio television simulcast to help support the event. So that was what I did for them. It was a lot of fun. Loved it.
Right, and big kudos to the recent fundraiser that was done. What, almost $4 million?
Yeah, I think just over. Exactly right.
Jason, I want to thank you so much for taking time to chat with us here on Monday Night Talk, and we'll pay attention to see what ends up happening with that merger.
All right, Kevin. Sounds good. Happy to join you.
You got there. He is Jason Wolf with DirtyWaterMedia.com, joining us for a few moments, talking a little bit about a merger. Somebody who pays attention to what's going on the radio dial. Very interesting to see what will end up happening in regards to the Department of Justice as they're looking into whether or not Entercom can buy CBS, not only the AM side, which is 10:30 AM, but also the Sports Hub. So it'll be interesting for that. Coming up on 7:20 here on 95.9 WATD, and we're going to slowly ease into our next segment. We have a couple of gentlemen. Gentlemen, if you want to kind of just scoot up to the microphone. We are anticipating one more person to be joining us, but we have joining us... state your name and what office you're running for.
I'm Bishop Tony Branch, running for Brockton City Council, Ward 4.
And I'm Angel Cosme, running for Ward 2, City Councilor Brockton.
All right, and we are anticipating that Jean Derenoncourt, did I say it right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, I wasn't sure. He is going to be here shortly. He is just navigating traffic at this particular time, so we thought we would put these two gentlemen at least up to the microphone. We were going to have Jason until 7:30, but we had to cut it short. Okay. Jason had a few things that he was working on. Can you hear okay in the headset?
I can, thank you.
You can now? Can you hear in your headset okay? I can put it up a little bit. How's
that?
Yep,
that sounds good.
All right. Gentlemen, welcome. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Welcome to Monday Night Talk. I did reach out to, there was one other individual that I reached out to, but he could not make it here. Gentleman running for mayor, Mike Carroll.
Okay.
He could not make it this time around. The idea of what we're doing here, instead of having you here up against somebody who's also seeking the same office, that they kind of it gives you time to come in for a couple of moments, kind of give a little bit of an appetizer to the folks who are paying attention. I don't know. Now, you, how many are in your race besides the incumbent?
Just
yourself?
The incumbent.
The incumbent. Yep. And there's no incumbent. How many
No incumbent. Two other folks that are running.
So you will have a preliminary race.
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
The fun has begun.
All right. Well, we know that, again, we were kind of waiting to see who was going to get their paperwork across the hall from the Elections Commission. And the idea was, is once we know folks who are getting their paperwork over to the city clerk's office in Brockton City Hall, then we would start slowly having folks trickle in and have these conversations to kind of get a better idea as to why you guys are seeking office, some of the things that you hope to do if you are successful. Again, you got to get over the first hurdle.
That's right.
Some of you don't. why are you seeking office?
Tony. You want to start with me? Well, actually, you know,
there's no rhyme or reason, but I just looked at you.
No worries. Bishop Tony Branch, I was not going to seek the Ward 4 City Council seat until citizens within the community had asked me to run either citywide or for the ward seat. Specifically, their concerns was they did not believe that the current setup looked as if there was teamwork between the council and the mayor's office in order to get things done. They felt that because I had a long relationship of community activism within the city and that I'm a part of many of the multicultural organizations, whether it's the Cape Verdean Association, the Haitian Association, work with social justice, that I would be a very strong contender to join the city council. So I said that I would put myself into the ring.
But you are already holding a seat right now. You correct. Are on the Southeastern Regional School Committee, right?
That is correct.
Right. Do you have to relinquish that seat if you're successful?
Actually, I don't.
Hold both.
Yeah, I can hold both. Okay. I'm in. If elected to the Brockton City Council, I intend to run for re-election to the Southeastern seat. A couple of things that the
community. Is that next year?
That's next year, correct. Okay, yeah. A couple of things that comes to mind, but the more immediate issue that the community has raised, and I think people are disconnected between the will of the community and what some of the elitism that's going on. There are no people of color on a school committee in Plymouth County. If I were to relinquish that seat, it is true that another person of color would run for the seat, but they may not be successful. I am the only person of color that has garnered over 3,000 votes running a campaign when I ran for the Democratic nomination with respect to the state committee. So it's important that we maintain that seat because there's just, quite frankly, a lack of diversity.
Angel, why are you seeking office?
Sure. So I have a little bit of a story behind that.
I like stories. Go
yes,
ahead.
Yes. So I'm an educator, and I was laid off along with, the 100-plus so teachers.
Oh, this year?
Yes.
Ooh.
Correct.
Okay.
And I actually said that if I was let go laid off and not rehired, that I would run for office. I would have the whole summer off and get to basically dedicate myself to this campaign. So I got laid off and was waiting for a call back and wasn't getting the call back. And so I made the decision to run, and I posted it on social media. And the very next day, I got an email saying that I was recalled. So then I had to make a decision whether or not I wanted to continue running, which I made the decision that I would. The city council has never had an educator in the seat, and my situation would be is peculiar in that as a city employee, I wouldn't be able to vote on educational issues at the city council. I would have to recuse myself. But the way that I sort of justify that is that I would be on the ground in the daytime, full-time, working as an educator. And then in the, you know, afternoon, should I be the successful candidate, work on the broader issues of the city. I've been a community organizer for years, a volunteer in the community for years, working on social justice issues. I've been an organizer with Brockton Interfaith Community, working on an array of things, criminal justice, education reform, and feel that as a city councilor, I'd be able to do more for the city, to represent the folks of Ward 2. Ward 2 is extremely diverse in terms of the diversity that exists there. I just want people to have a choice this election. Monahan, who I respect, has run unopposed, and so now the voters have a choice, and we have two good candidates. I intend to run a clean campaign and give it my all. But I think once the voters see what I bring to the table and what I've been doing for years, they actually have an informed decision, and that's what the democratic process is all about.
Is there less of a? Would you not be able to run for school committee as an educator in the city of Brockton?
Correct.
I just want to make sure I'm
correct. Yes.
Clear, because I would have asked you
why not
run for that, but you did state that you were recalled, and it's a wise choice. What's your understanding of the process? And I'm just asking this as a general question. I've asked everybody. This is the first time that you're running that I know of.
Correct.
This is your second bite of the apple, if mm-hmm. I'm correct, right? Because mm-hmm. you ran 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Give me your understanding of the process.
Of the process of running for office?
Running for office, as far as financials, as far as the issues. You don't have to get, don't get into the issues, the meat and the potatoes of the issues, but just the process. Because again, I think voters, I think the idea of what I try to do here is educate the voters. And that's what, you know, you want to have an educated voter going into the booth.
Right, right.
So
great question. It's absolutely, I mean, we live in the United States, and the United States is founded upon, rights and liberties, sure. A democratic process. And there's the ideal democratic, process, but then there's the reality of it. But we actually live in a country that promotes and encourages civic engagement. And as long as we meet the criteria and we are open and transparent and working hard, pretty much anyone can run. And it's within our right to do that. But I feel absolutely that I'm 100% qualified to run for office for many reasons. I was a mayoral campaign manager a couple of years ago for a gentleman who was running for office. I've taken plenty of political courses outside of my education, my formal education at getting my master's degree in education. I took the Commonwealth Seminar Program. I took the Latino Leadership Initiative Program at Harvard Kennedy School, the Latino Leadership Opportunity Program at UMass Medical. I was a fellow for Obama for 12 weeks in 2012. So all of this sort of led me to be at a place in my life where being an educator, being a community organizer, even I was a clinician too for substance abuse and adolescent youth suffering from mental health. I feel like all of those lenses, if you will, and the fact that I'm a father of a soon-to-be 15-year-old in a week and a half.
Say
yes,
that again.
I'm 41 years old.
People, how old does he look to you?
I get that all the time, and I'm glad you brought that up because
but that's good, though.
Yeah, he looks so young.
But there's a thing that I'm realizing that I don't get enough respect or credit because I look young. But people see me and they think I'm in my 20s. I'm 41 years old. I've had a lot of life experiences.
You're in your late 20s, probably.
Thank you. I'm blessed. I am. My mother's 73 and she looks fantastic and has got a lot of energy. Yeah. So my son. So I'm also a parent of a teenager who goes to school at Brockton High, and so
I walked that road a few times myself.
Yes. So
I hear you. Go ahead. But no, that's same with you. As far as what's your understanding of the process?
Similar to what Angel has said, and I think for me is that I've been on the other side of this sort of work as a political strategist. I mean, it's no secret that what I've been well known for is both national campaigns and statewide campaigns. But with that said, my community activism, even most recently, if you talk about Raise Up Massachusetts, the fight for 15, fair shared issues around TPS with respect to the temporary protection status of our Haitian partners. When you talk about that sort of community activism, that's the work that I've been in I'm a very strong advocate for the citizen that is on the ground. So I'm more so of a person with respect to this process. I've been knocking on doors and asking the community, what are your needs? I think that the disconnect has been, and this is a part of the reason how Trump got into office, is the reality of it is that people are not connecting to the everyday lives of the citizens of the city of Brockton or any other city across this Commonwealth. So it's a clergyman like me that's been homeless, that's been in the foster care system, that has experienced a rough life, that has had financial difficulties no different than anyone else, that understands the common problems that makes me very, very attractive to the citizens of our city.
Okay. This is what we're going to do. We're gonna step aside for just a moment. Hopefully Gene will be here to join in the conversation at some point in time. The door will, of course, be open for him. Hopefully he'll get there here in a short amount of time. You are listening to Monday Night Talk. When we come back, we'll return with more conversation with the candidates from the city of Brockton. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back. I just want to take a quick moment before the show proceeds any further and just kind of put out my condolences to the Mahena family. Rich Mahena, a longtime volunteer for the Talking Information Center, a gentleman with a booming voice, a great guy. Can't tell you how many times I've had conversations with Rich about certain things and some of the stuff that he loved, especially being a broadcaster. Lost him over the weekend, and I just wanted to at least recognize him. And also, not to mention, the great Jerry Lewis.
Yes,
he passed away.
Amen.
No Labor Day would ever be the same as a kid.
Amen.
Without, you know, until a few years ago when they decided to go in a different direction. Correct. But Labor Days were...
That's right. We all were raised on that.
The MDA, yes. The MDA telethons. And so it's tough news. And also one other individual that I was known, school committee, Social Vote Tech School Committee, Kenny Smith, passing away late last week as well. Just a
pray for their families.
Pray for their families and all great citizens. And so we wanted to just throw that up there. And again, we are speaking with a couple of individuals who are here running for office. Angel Cosme, running for Ward 2 City Council, and Bishop Tony Branch, running for Ward 4 City Council. Of course, the disclaimer is that Tony is a member of the Southeastern Regional School Committee.
Thank you.
A Brockton representative. Mm-hmm. So they're here, and just getting word that Gene Durand-Uncourt cannot make it this week. So it's, gentlemen, all this is yours.
Right. Thank you. Thank you.
We have the floor.
I have a regular conversation with John McGarry, who is the executive director of the Elections Commissions.
Right.
And one of the things that has frustrated him this year is that individuals seem to be are running for office because someone goes, hey, you should run for office.
Right.
Or, you know, it'd be a good idea. Do you both feel as though that you're running for the right reason, that you're running for office for the right reason?
Well, I'm running for office. The right reason is that the community has asked you to run. The right reason is, in fact, that you can offer something to the role.
Right. But you're not somebody who's been put up to run.
No, absolutely. That would be ridiculous.
But that has been the conversation.
Well, but I started our conversation talking about the elitism in the city of Brockton. You know, I'm one that when I ran for the Democratic seat with respect to the committee, the Democratic committee itself, I was astonished when people told me that the seat belonged to Mike Brady and you're not supposed to run for it, basically until it's your time. This is the attitude with respect to the elitism, even in political parties that we're affiliated with. And I think that a lot of the pushback that I have gotten recently is because I am a staunch advocate for the community. I'm someone that will not broker a deal with anyone. The expectation is that people that are elected to office are going to have a scorecard. And I've been saying is for at least the last 3 or 4 years, we should be scorecarding folks that once they've gotten elected to see what accomplishments that they have done. And this is what we have done in the private sector that I've done as an executive when you have managerial employees. So I don't think that there is should be a disconnect between the evaluation of one's performances in the public sector is my point.
Angel?
And the simple answer, I'm absolutely running for myself. No one encouraged me to run. I made a decision. Mm-hmm. I sort of made myself a promise, and the opportunity, the timing was just right for me to do it. I'm running to represent the people of Ward 2, the people of Brockton, the people who have been historically sort of ignored in the city. I'm talking about the elderly population, right, the veterans, the immigrant community, the homeless. That's who I'm running for, and I'm running with strictly the intention to empower, to help Brockton to become prosperous, and to give a voice to those who, may have been, ignored in the process of our, elections in the past.
Temptation to run for a higher office. Did either one of you think about it, ponder it, while both of you are running for a ward? You know, and that's just, it's a district, it's a chunk of the city, and instead of trying to bite off more than you could possibly chew. Because I think sometimes some people, they see the grandeur in running for at-large, and at-large is like being, it's almost like you're being a mayor, because you're representing all the, while you don't wield the same power, you don't pull the same salary, you're still somebody who you have constituents all over the city, and not just a district.
That's a very good question, Kevin, and for me, I would not be a good fit for anything else but either school committee or the council seat. I don't have aspirations for that type of role, quite frankly. You know, I've been in, again, it's no secret, I've been in the private sector for too long and have made a pretty good life when I could. So my preference would be in a role that I could represent the people as an activist, and they would see me as a city council activist or as an activist city councilor, and nothing more than that.
Angel?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I wouldn't run for anything but Ward 2. I feel like starting in the ward that I live in and starting sort of quote-unquote smaller is the right thing to do. I don't have any intentions to be mayor. I much respect to all of those who are running and those who have currently held that office, but it's a big job, and it takes a lot of knowledge, a lot of patience, and I at this time I don't have any ambition. I just want to become Ward 2 city councilor at this time.
Well, the reason why I ask that, and I've been doing this long enough, whether it's a city race, a town, something going on in a town in the spring, or next year we're going to have state races. Folks are going to be running for state representative, state senate. Right. You'll have gubernatorial races. You'll have folks running for AG and auditor, and it amazes me. And let's not forget also Congress. You know, Congress every 2 years, they're up, and it amazes me. People who just come out of the woodwork and who've never run for office before want to seek that higher office, and it's not a bad thing.
It could be a bad thing, Kevin. So I want to push back on that, because it could be a bad thing if, in fact, we are electing people because of grandeur. And that is because we might elect someone because they're young and vibrant. Mm-hmm. But that's the bottom line, is we need to, at this point, and because of the issues that the city of Brockton is facing, we need to be elect people like myself and like Angel or others that have been a part of the grassroots movement in the city of Brockton and really speak to the lens that people are looking at things. We I've lived this life, and so I understand that. So for me, I'm a little frustrated because when I was recently talking to someone about TPS, and that is a large issue within the Haitian community, and people were like, "Well, what is
folks
that?
Who don't know what is the acronym? What does TPS stand for?"
TPS is a temporary protective status that the Trump administration had reversed and has now reset it for 6 months. But again, those citizens, 50,000 Haitians, can be sent right back to Haiti with some notice, but without any support from the Haitian government. And we're concerned about that. That's a large part of our population. But the political structure in this city is not aware of that. And I think that we need to go back to, and with all due respect, I know that I'm clergy and I can talk Christ all day, but we need to have a social contract, a social impact, a social constitution when we deal with the citizens of the city of Brockton. I think that largely that is missing, because the issues that the everyday man or woman child is facing really is not known but to a select group of activists. Mm-hmm. We bring something, or at least I'm going to bring something different to the city council around that. One of the things that I immediately think that we should change is that we don't do a hearing of visitors at the Brockton City Council, so people can't even come up and have a good discussion about some of their concerns. I think we should open the door to that so people will be able to bring what they need to our legislative branch.
And if I could just sort of highlight something a little bit different that I think I'm particularly proud of in terms of the people who are stepping up to run for office. I love the diversity that's in Brockton. I value the diversity in terms of ethnicity and gender and all of those things, but particularly with the issue of race. Brockton is I don't know, I've heard different things, but I'm going to say for the sake of statistics, maybe 50% people of color and 50% white people, which is about roughly what I'm hearing, give or take.
But that's a broad brush to be painting, because I would think that if you broke it down even deeper, you'd be able to kind of know the cross section of individuals. I mean, you're talking, it's many immigrants have come to the city of Brockton,
right. Yeah.
And planted their feet here to find a direction,
right,
that they want to go and become once they are here.
Right. And that's my point. I'm particularly proud of the fact that I think we have, if my math is correct, I'm maybe off one or two candidates, but 17 candidates of color running, which is about 40% of the total number of candidates of the 45 that are running. Mm-hmm. That's something to highlight. That's something to be proud of, that people are stepping up and running. And I say that, I want to be particularly clear. It's not just, people of color running. It's because we need everybody. We need white people. We need Cape Verdeans. We need Haitians. We need Latinos. But I'm Puerto Rican, and, I'm Latino. And if I win, I'd be the first Latino elected in Brockton's history. And it's 2017, and we're having these kind of discussions. Mm-hmm. My point is, people are given the national climate, there's anti-immigrant rhetoric, and a city like ours that embraces the diversity or should embrace the diversity, it's an important time for people to step up, and we're doing that here in Brockton, and I'm proud of everyone who's made that decision. It's not easy. You're putting yourself on the line, but you're doing it. Hopefully everyone is doing it with the right intentions to uplift our city. We all want that. Even those we're running against want to see Brockton prosper, and I think we need to keep our eyes on that, keep the issues at the forefront.
What are the issues? Are there real issues? And what are your thoughts in regards to the issues? Because I think too many times over the years that I have been a journalist, somebody who's followed politics, whether it's on the local level, the state level, the national level, is that folks have, they've got all kinds of, piss and vinegar, so to speak, to want to get into office, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And sometimes, realize that it's not an army of one,
right?
But it's to be able to collaborate and to be able to work with others.
Right. I feel that that's actually something that I bring and I highlight to the table. I could disagree with you and still be able to separate the issue from the actual person. I work well with a whole bunch of people who don't share the views that I have, and I'm still respectful. I think most people will say that I'm extremely respectful and easy to talk to. But the issues that I'd say that I would bring about, I could have created a platform on issues that I believe will help me win, or issues that I think people would want me to run on. Or
be realistic, though.
But I have to come from the heart and the issues that I think are important. So I'll name two for the sake of time. One is Ward 2 has a significant homeless population. and never would I profess that I have all the answers, but definitely collectively, with treatment providers and elected officials and the clergy and congregants and the community members and organizations, together we can make a difference. And so that's one issue that I think needs a little bit more attention. And it's not just displacing the homeless people. It's not just getting rid of them so that we could, you know, put up residences that are going to make Brockton prosperous, although we need to do that, but not at the expense of individuals who are at the lowest. And so I feel like I'm bringing a compassionate lens, and I'm not alone. There's plenty of people working on that issue, and collectively we can resolve that. There's no reason that we should have a few hundred. It's only a few hundred, and I know that's a lot, but compared to a city like Boston, who has done a lot more than us, it's something that we could rectify completely and not have people sleeping in the streets. And the intention would be to eventually help them to help themselves, right? We don't want to keep enabling them, if you will. A person has to come to their own conclusion once, you know, they get a little bit of help to help themselves. And that's the goal. But right now, we need to help that population. The other population I feel is important is the immigrant population, whether documented or not. They're growing in Brockton. They're present in Brockton. And I feel like we need to embrace them, help them to get acclimated into society, help them to become citizens. There's not a clear pathway, as people may think, that exists for immigration. But at least we can help them to learn English, to become employed.
Can I sure, stop you right
course,
there?
Of course.
When your parents came here, or your grandparents, or whomever came over and began that, how did they get here?
Okay, good.
If I could ask, because all of us,
right?
All of us, we didn't originate here,
right?
Unless you're
Native American.
I agree. And
so I mean, there has been a process, whether it's deteriorated over time or it's something that has been lax,
right?
Has to be the question. So there, I think there's a process. It's just a matter of, are people following that process?
Yeah, yeah. So to answer your first
Please
question,
do, yes.
Kevin, my parents are from Puerto Rico, and Puerto Ricans have been U.S. citizens for 100 years now, since 1917. Mm-hmm. I do want to highlight that although we're U.S. citizens, people like my parents who live on the island, they've been living there for 11 years. They raised four children here. We were all born in New York City. And my father worked in a factory all his life, never made more than $9 an hour. But he can't, now that he lives in Puerto Rico, him and my mom cannot vote for the president of the United States, because there's just this clause that doesn't allow them to. But they're U.S. citizens.
But is this still work for statehood? Wasn't it like some recent vote that they're like this? It's a quagmire about, you know, whether you know, Puerto Ricans want to be the 51st state, or if they want to be a commonwealth,
independent nation.
It's
extremely.
Right.
It's
is there a divide?
There is a huge divide.
It's not very, to go off track here.
No, very, very political. But that's a whole other issue. And some argue that maybe statehood will give them the full access to citizenship. There's one other fact that I just want to highlight.
Please do.
There's a resident commissioner who sits in Congress who doesn't have a vote, and so it's a token representation,
right,
in every sense of the word. So I just want to highlight that in some aspect, arguably, it's second class citizenship. But nonetheless, they came from Puerto Rico. They're U.S. citizens, but we share similar experiences as far as discrimination, just like any other immigrant community. I mean, even the Irish were severely oppressed when they came.
The Italians,
I'm a history teacher. I understand that. But we focus too much on what makes us, what divides us, or what makes us different, instead of embracing the fact that we all came from different places and we are all here, and we all, you know, immigrants are pictured as criminals, and they're hardworking, family-oriented people, and those are the ones who I'm advocating for. If you're murdering and selling drugs to the community, that's a different story. But most of them are hardworking people who just want to raise their kids here and make a prosperous life for themselves, and that's who needs to be heard.
Well,
the question that was asked was issues, but if you want to...
No, I think that what Angel has said is very, very well articulated, and I think that it's important because, as you know, Chair of the Diversity Commission, we hear a lot about our immigration population and the support that they need, but we also hear the other side with respect to crime. And this misnomer that they're bringing crime into our neighborhoods, which is not true. But when you hear a person like Angel, who's just said that if you're murdering and committing, and I'm not paraphrasing, if that's not acceptable. So again, activists are not looking to bring criminals into the neighborhood, and we need to dispel that myth. But with respect to what the community has said that they need, in working with the victims of domestic violence, especially with the LGBTQT families, a couple of issues have come up. As people know, that I'm typically the minister in the city that has been called to do a lot
lot of the visuals. I think that it is very important that we finally in this city have a public-private partnership around domestic violence. I think it should be everywhere that it's not accepted. I think it should be everywhere that the phone numbers should be placed up, and it should be everywhere that immigrants that are coming to this country, where some of these standards, quite frankly, in other countries are not as stiff on domestic violence as here in the United States or in the Commonwealth, that they be aware that it is unlawful. We're not going to accept the beating up of someone regarding their, whether they're a male or a female. So, and then the second piece of that is that we were looking to develop a welcoming center for our immigrant population that is coming in, around giving them help and resources around regulations, expectations of how a business should be run, and resources around loans and stuff like that. A lot of our immigrant populations that are coming in, they're doing it on their own. Some of them are failing because they don't have the resources. Some of them are failing because they didn't even know they have a business certificate. I think the city of Brockton needs to be much more welcoming. And then the third piece, which probably should have been the first piece of this, is my conversation around public safety and traffic enforcement around the Campello area. My disabled families and elderly are unable to cross the street because people are speeding, people are parking at handicap ramps that they're not even able to come up and down the street. We need strict parking enforcement in the Campello area, and that's something that we can immediately work on and that is tangible.
I will say this, is I'm in Brockton on a regular basis. I do business. I do my banking in there. I have a P.O. box in Brockton. And there's a pure ignorance when it comes when it comes to pedestrians, when it comes to traffic. I can't tell you how many times I'm on Commercial Street and I'm in, you know, the pedestrian stripe, and people just vroom, they'll zoom on by. That's what I was doing, folks. I was zooming on, pretending I was a car there for a moment.
Right.
But people will, and I'll look at them, and you know, I've had people who've swore at me because I'm like, I'm in a crosswalk.
Right.
It's a $100 fine.
It is $100.
And let's not forget, a couple of years ago, you had, I want to say,
several
pedestrians that were struck, whether it was by the fault of the pedestrian, if they weren't paying attention on an iPod, or an individual who was behind a motor vehicle who wasn't paying attention.
So I'm a person of color who has been well aware of being stopped while driving black, but I can tell you this. We
DWB.
Need stricter traffic enforcement in the city of Brockton. Right. And I, quite frankly, public safety is at the top of my list because, a large part of my population in Ward 4 are elderly. Mm-hmm. They are impacted. Yeah, exactly. Campello High Rise coming around the corner on Plain Street. They're impacted by this. But when I see, my mother was quadriplegic. When I see that you cannot, you know, cars are parked on sidewalks at some of these auto body shops, some of these repair shops, people are unable to get by. That's a public safety hazard that needs to be dealt with. That's what a ward councilor should be working on.
And if I could chime in on that issue, because I think it's extremely important. And you bring up a good point in terms of public safety. I just want to highlight something that's being done about it at a real grassroots level. I've been fortunate enough to work with Pastor Francis. Amen. Pastor Francis lost her son Isaiah Caban in April due to a car accident on Summer Street, and she wishes that this does not happen to any other family member. And as a result, has created a foundation called Isis World. Her son is his nickname is Isa, and so it's Isis World, and it's intended to promote driver safety, and. It has a component of her going into the schools and talking to students about the importance of this of not being distracted and texting, et cetera. So we've met with the mayor, we've met with our state delegation, every single Brockton representative and Senator Brady, and we're going to now meet with Robert Sullivan coming up this week to talk about Isis World and how the community could get involved in ensuring that we help Brockton to be safe in terms of all these rashes of accidents that are unnecessary and that don't need to happen. So shout out to Pastor Francis, and if anyone wants to get involved in that, please let us know, because we're going to be coming out with some information that is really going to save lives.
Again, that's Angel Cosme. He's running for Ward 2 Ward 2 Council, and Bishop Tony Branch running for Ward 4 City Council. Probably the last question I'll ask you, we only just got a couple of moments left here on Monday Night Talk, heard on 95.9 WATD FM and also 1460 AM in Brockton. And that is, being a part of the city council. It's supposed to be strong council, weak mayor, but you see a lot of things that go on where the mayor is usually the one who usually the one who's putting out initiatives and stuff. And when it comes to budget time, it's the mayor's budget that's put forth. And the only thing that the city council can do is make cuts. They can't add. What's your thoughts in regards to being a member of that board?
Well, I think that what's important, again, coming from a person from private sector, managing budgets as well as being on several councils and boards, I think that the conversation between the council and the mayor should probably happen. I think that the needs should be known to the mayor prior to the budget being released. I think that it, you know, what I used to expect from my managers is say, yeah, we spent $600,000 on office supplies. This year we need $650,000. And give me some justification for that. I think that those sort of emails can be exchanged so the expectation is set on what the council feels that the citizens of Brockton need.
Yeah, and I'll just add that as a city council member, it'd basically be the budget issues and creating ordinances. I think if indeed it is a strong council and weak mayor, that there should be more power allocated and more say in budgetary reasons. I mean, you have 12 individuals versus one. I think there's more collective say in that.
But is that a change in the city charter? I mean, again, it's also it depends on the former government. The former government the way it is.
But Kevin, why can't we have a conversation? And this is what frustrates the citizen. Why aren't there conversations already or prior to the budget time where the mayor and the council are on the same page? Finally, when they get to the final budget, it's not this hoopla that there is this embarrassment to the citizens on major newscasts that there's this huge disconnect. I think a lot of these conversations could be had between the managers of these departments in the city council even before the mayor puts the final stamp on. Again, it's about collaboration. The reason why I'm running is because people feel that there's a lack of collaboration. Strong council or not, there has to be collaboration.
Angel?
I agree. I mean, absolutely, whoever is the mayor, whether it's Mayor Carpenter or we have a new mayor, it is absolutely our responsibility to be able to work together. We may not agree, we could roll up our sleeves and come up to an agreement and be able to explain to the voters how we voted a particular way, be transparent about it, explain to the voters what options we were faced with and why we decided the way we did. If at least we did that, I think we'd have more trust in the from the voters.
If folks want to find out more about your campaigns, how can they do that?
You can go on Facebook, elect Angel Cosme for Brockton Ward 2, or you can go online at angelcosme.org on my website. You can also call me directly, 617-512-5305.
Same thing with me. I'm pretty sure most of you know how to find me in recent days. 774-257-4338. Please also feel free to email ctetonybranch@gmail.com. And remember to say something great about our city. God bless you.
And I definitely appreciate both of you gentlemen being able to make
Thank
it.
Thank you for having us, Kevin.
Sorry that we couldn't have Gene in, and again, the idea is we want to try to keep having these conversations. Yeah. While we're not having a political forum, we're not doing a debate, it at least gives you an opportunity to reach out to your voter base and get them mobilized, whether it's for September or whether it's for November, whatever the cause may be. We are coming up to the top of the hour. We look forward to tuning back in with you next week at 6:15 p.m. At least we don't have to worry about an eclipse that may throw us off kilter for the day. So until next week, have yourself a great evening.
Thank you for having me.
The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.